In the second week of my career as a sound editor, I have reached the proverbial stage where I know just enough to be dangerous. My goal for this week was to dramatically improve the presentation over last week. My first indication of trouble was during session one, when I discovered I had closed a cat up in the room with me. More than a dozen recording sessions later, you'll still find plenty of goofs. Maybe you'll even have a favorite. Mine is when I refer to meditate as medicate. That could be Freudian. The reason I bring it up is please don't let the mistakes overshadow the message. Thanks in advance for your understanding. If you find yourself looking for some solid ground right now, well, be assured that you're not alone. There's so many things that we simply took for granted that aren't available to us right now. Things as simple as just a standard medical procedure or a dental procedure. I've grown so used to going in the grocery store and always finding full aisles. Some people who a month ago were feeling great about the future are now worried about their jobs and concerned about finances. No school, no sports, or little if any socializing. And when these familiar things start shifting away from us, then we begin to look for things that don't shift, things that don't change. As I began to focus on things to share during the coronavirus crisis, I kept going back to Bible characters. So many of the stories we know are actually an explanation of how they manage crisis. So for the next few weeks, I'd like to look into the biblical accounts of a smattering of Bible characters, and to look especially at how they dealt with some of the crises they faced. Those same old Bible stories that have been a part of our lives for decades can be a guiding light through the current darkness. Obviously, my hope is that their actions will be an inspiration and a motivation for us. We'll look at how they relied on their faith, what choices they made, and what strategies they choose. At times, we'll even question their decisions. Now, when you think of David from the Bible, what scenes come to mind? David being chased by Saul? David and Bathsheba? David's friendship with Jonathan, or the rebellion of David's son Absalom? There are really a multitude of them. Maybe you think of David as a warrior, because he did plenty of that. But most of us would say first, we think of David and Goliath. There aren't many folks who don't know about David of Israel, and specifically David and Goliath fame. Little kids love the drama. Adults are encouraged to believe that anything with God is doable. Most sports fans can give you a David and Goliath example. You know, where the obvious loser winds up winning. Usually my team is the Goliath in the story. In fact, pretty much all the time my team is the Goliath, but I digress. David, the useful sheep herder, was sent by his father to take the supplies to his brothers and others who were fighting the Philistines. The Bible refers to David as a young man. 1 Samuel 17:33. Now, how old is that? We don't know. We only know from the Bible that David is old enough to be a shepherd, but too young to be a part of the army. Maybe 14 or 15 or so would be my guess. When David arrives at the Valley of Elah, he witnesses something that stirs his heart. A Philistine giant has Israel's army in terror. There's a daily challenge from Goliath, and David is upset that nobody has accepted the challenge. Remember, Goliath is 9 feet 8 inches tall. Now, luckily, the NBA scouts hadn't found him. If you put him on a basketball court, the top of his head would only be 4 inches short of the rim. He wouldn't even have to leave his feet to dunk. What the army of Israel sees is insurmountable. David the sheep herder finds this offensive. I won't spend time on the details, so fast forwarding, David actually goes out to fight this giant, armed only with a sling. Now, a sling was an effective weapon and used extensively at the time, but let's not lose sight of the reality of David's victory. It's not about the sling. The discussion of David's verbal encounter with Goliath before the brief skirmish is impressive. Goliath seems to be a bit offended. 1 Samuel 17:33 and 44. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. My guess is that David expected to not even break a sweat in conquering this kid. How does David reply? Well, in 1 Samuel 17, starting in verse 45, we find, David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." Now, what's he doing? Well, on first impulse, you might think he's trash-talking a giant. But it's more than that. David absolutely knows that God has given him the battle. There's no doubt in his mind. Now, the battle itself is brief. If you've been watching on pay-per-view, you'd have probably wanted your money back. One rock, a big crash, and David sealed the outcome with Goliath's own sword. The battle was the Lord's. So if we're looking at things from a crisis perspective, what was the crisis? Yeah, how about the military's failure to protect the nation? The Philistines had overrun Israel before, remember Samson. Could it happen again? If so, all of Israel would be subjected to abuse, starvation, slavery. The kid got it. What if they win? Or what about a leadership crisis? Why wasn't Saul out there? He's the big guy. Failure of all the adults that a kid could look up to. But for David, it's clearly a faith crisis. Nobody had the faith to act on the promises of God. 1 Samuel 17:26, the first part of that verse. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Who is this guy? Who does he think he is? Does he know our God? Right now, there's a pretty big giant attacking our world. Our giant isn't hurling insults. Our giant is literally standing with his foot on the neck of his victims. A pandemic that has killed 27,000 worldwide. 100,000 cases in the U.S. alone. 1,500 deaths in our country as of Friday. If that's not enough, our giant has not only damaged health, but threatens the very institution that support finance and government worldwide. When reading stories of the Holocaust, you'll often be told about Jewish people and groups asking, "Where is God?" Well, I want you to know God is here. God is sovereign. God is in control. And even in the scariest times, God is God. And we can trust him. And we can look to him. You know, when you think through this whole story, you can see quickly that David experiences a personal loss here as well. He loses his innocence. He loses his childhood. Now, maybe it was time, but David went to the Valley of Elah, a delivery boy, and he came back as the heart and soul of Israel. 1 Samuel 16:7-8 says, "When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. As they danced, they sang, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands.'" Life as David knew had changed forever. Yeah, Saul would hang around for a while and give David a difficult time. My mother's brother was an 18-year-old sailor on the USS Oklahoma on December 7th, 1941. As he told it, he was just a happy-go-lucky kid who had the world by the tail. The man who came back to Tribby, Oklahoma in 1945 would bear no resemblance to that boy. Culturally, we may well be past a place of no return. the way we do things in our world will likely never be the same. David dealt with that through faith, and that's really our only true option as well. I have a friend who literally was born for another time. Back in the late 1990s, his children were fond of saying, "We're trying to drag Dad into the 20th century before the 21st century arrives." And I can tell you, they didn't succeed. We can look back on the past with fondness. No doubt there were times when David could have reminisced about being a shepherd boy again, and maybe even longed for and imagined all the things that he missed in his personal life. But like David, but like Esther, he had come to the kingdom for such a time as this. David did what he had to do, did what God wanted him to do, and continued to serve God. But there's no doubt that David paid a price on a personal level. Won't we be glad to get back to normal? But will we? What if the experts are right? What will we be adjusting to? A new normal? That takes courage. And for some of us, that'll require a lot of faith. Nobody knows what the future holds, but we know, as we frequently say, that God holds the future. Now, there were many of other crises in David's life, and we don't have time to examine all of them, although you might find it useful to do that in your own personal time. But quickly, let's look at just one more. Bathsheba. David made a huge mistake by having an adulterous affair with Bathsheba. And then he compounded that mistake through a cover-up that ended with David having a man killed, the mighty and loyal Uriah. David was faced with the crisis of sin, and he didn't do as well with this one. What strategy did he choose? Well, he chose to hide. And until the prophet Nathan brought it out into the open, David may have felt like he was doing fairly well. Why did David choose to cover up his sin? Why hide? I think you could easily conclude that he was afraid. Fear causes us to do some pretty extreme things. Right now, there's plenty of fear. With the numbers of ill growing, the things we rely upon less and less easily obtained, we can be fearful. When we're afraid, Satan answers our fear with an attempt to create more of it. And it just feeds on itself and it becomes larger and larger. And always, always the antidote to that fear is faith. When we choose fear, we choose Satan's path. And we allow Satan to direct our footsteps. David brought so much on himself, upon his family and Israel, because he didn't want to deal with his sin. But he had to own up. But the way David deals with his sin is exemplary. Psalms 51, which was read earlier, so many powerful phrases in that scripture. David begs that God will blot out my transgressions, wash away my iniquity, cleanse me from my sin, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and grant me a willing spirit. David knew that he had failed, and how he must have wished that he had done things differently, and we can all identify with that. Psalm 51 makes it clear. When David looked back on the crisis, he knew he had failed, and he wanted to do better than that. We don't get all A pluses on the crises. There are ones that we fail. Hopefully we learn and we grow and we're more prepared for the next crisis, because crisis can be and should be a learning experience. There are people all over the world who are walking new paths. Parents are learning to be teachers. I've really enjoyed seeing the places in Italy where in the evening people are gathering at their windows and sharing music and song and good wishes and various kinds of communication. There are folks who are finding ways to do their jobs, to share their skills. There are children who are having an opportunity to stand up and their talents be known and observed as they try to share them with other people in the world. You may have seen the one guy who's actually walking his dog with a drone. There are things that we will never forget that we're learning during this time. You know, actually, David had a plague. And that was another crisis of David. We don't have time for that today, but hopefully at another time soon. Like many stories, this is one of contrast. In the first instance, battling Goliath, David's faith conquered his fear. But in the second, at least initially, his fear was victorious over his faith. This is what it's all about, that conflict. I pray that in this fearful time that faith will win out. But in the moments when we fail, in the moments when we're weak, we can learn. And we can seek forgiveness and rededicate ourselves to serving our God. You know, David is referred to as a man after God's own heart. And sometimes when we look at David's mistakes, we think, how? How does that describe David? Well, I don't have a complete answer, but I see some of the parts. And to me, the most critical part was David's attitude about prayer. And we have recorded so many of David's expressions to God. We see that he's thankful, dedicated, obedient, emotional, honest, passionate, sorry, and on it goes. But at so many crossroads, critical crossroads in David's life, he will use the phrase, inquire of the Lord. That's what we need to do. We need to inquire of the Lord. And it's repeated a number of times in reference to David. David wants to know, what does God say? What does God want us to do? And right now, when we don't know, when we certainly don't have the answers individually, some of the best advice we could take from this Bible character, David, is I'm going to inquire of the Lord. I've got time. I've got time to pray. I've got time to focus. I've got time to meditate. I've got time to do the kinds of things that I'd really like to do. And as I mentioned last week, to further my relationship with God. And so when fear creeps around the corner, when we really would like to use our faith, then that gets to be the moment where we commit ourselves to the action of, I'm going to talk to God about this, see what God wants me to do.